Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Oh, she's back. Good morning, everyone. Amy Jacobson here. Dan Proft just around the corner. He'll be here in just moments. But Emily Landon, she's epidemiologist from University of Chicago. She had such dramatic performances during the first round of lockdowns where she warned people so theatrically to stay in your house and mask up.
You will take my message to heart and you'll lead your families, your communities, your neighborhoods in wearing your masks, in staying home when you don't need to be out, in order to make space for essential workers to be able to get to their essential jobs, and for other people to do important tasks. And when you do go out, you wear your mask proudly because it says to others that you're not giving up and you're not giving in because you're in this fight to win.
Well, she has, some words for Mayor Lightfoot because she's very upset that Mayor Lightfoot is not canceling Lollapalooza, which, by the way, starts on Thursday. And here's her message, because remember, it's all about the green.
Remember how much people are motivated by money. It's really all about money. People, in many cases, will throw you, your health, your family's health, your grandmother's health under the bus in order to make a few more dollars.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Mayor Lightfoot responded.
The Lala team has been phenomenal. They've hired their own public health experts.
And here's the deal. The event's going to have the same capacity limits as in the last few years, 100K a day. And the city insists that they'll be checking vaccination cards and negative tests results. But some believe that is not going to happen, including Dr. Duguid.
Lala has let us down with respect to how vigorously they are in restricting people based on the things that they sort of initially told us were going to be really strict. And now it looks like they've lightened up quite considerably on the checking of vaccines and tests.
And Mayor Lightfoot says, that's not what's going to happen, dear.
God bless the critics standing on the sidelines, but I feel confident that the Lala folks have a good, solid plan in place. If I thought for a moment that shutting down Lala prevent further spread in the way that we're seeing it, then I wouldn't hesitate to do that.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Mike, I wanted to bring you in on this conversation, if you can. Hold one second. Do you know, because I tried to call the Lala organizers if they're really going to be checking negative COVID tests and also if you have your vaccination card. They want you to carry it with you. They don't want you to have it on your phone. They want you to carry the actual vaccination card with.
I've not seen any confirmation that Lala will be checking anything.
Okay.
Specifically, now, I'm not 100% sure the city and Lala haven't worked that out yet, but I've not seen independent confirmation from any news sources that I've seen that Lala has a plan to hold up the line to keep people from entering into Lollapalooza before they flash a card or flash a test.
Do you think it's a good idea that we're having Lollapalooza? I mean, the cases are, the positivity rate is still is at 2% for the state. It's at 3%, which is not to cause an alarm. Because if you look at hospitalizations and death rates right now, we're better than we were last year by 75%.
If we've learned anything from our bout with H1N1, it's that if what the Obama administration did at that point was to abandon case counting because it was a fruitless exercise, and concentrate on serious cases that either led to hospitalization or death. And those were the cases that counted. Those were the cases that drove public health response. That was the Obama administration. That was their official response after dealing seriously with H1N1 and badly at times.
But why the media this time, why did they blow it so out of proportion? Was it because of Trump? Was it because it was a newer variant? I mean, I still am trying to wrap my head around that, because I thought if every country in this world, except for Sweden, seemed to be doing the same things with these draconian lockdowns. But in Europe, they kept kids going to school. They kept kids playing sports. They kept playing sports. So I don't know what was the difference between this one and H1N1.
It seems that the Delta variant is simply more like most mutated viruses. From the information that we've all received, the virus simply spreads quicker, faster. It's not more serious. It's not leading to more deaths, according to the CDC and according to the Johns Hopkins Project. It's not leading to more hospitalizations. It's just the case counts are rising because, like a mutated virus, it appears, according to the experts, that this has some serious legs to it in the ability to infect people with minor cases of COVID-19. And again, some major. So, you do see some ICU rates, but those are ICUs that are set aside for COVID, not for other serious cases.
Right.
So when somebody tells you that an ICU is full, what they're telling you is that the ICU beds that are set aside for COVID-19, they may have 19 beds, 4 set aside for COVID-19, 4 beds.
Right, are full, and nobody knows. And also, when your positivity rate goes from 0.4 to 1.5, this is the hyperbole you get from the mainstream media. This is nightly news on Sunday.
Here in Illinois, the Delta variant has caused cases to double in the last 2 weeks. The governor and the mayor of Chicago saying that new restrictions could be reimposed.
And that just infuriates me because, I mean, technically it almost has quadrupled. It has tripled if you go from 0.4 to 1.5. But that's so irresponsible to do that and then to spread fear. And then people wonder, oh, Chicago's back on the rise again. Should I cancel my trip to Chicago? Mm-hmm. Oh, let's call our family members and see if they're okay in Chicago.
Right.
And then that gets CTUs, wheels spinning, and everyone's just going to spiral out of control.
Well, we've seen what happened in reaction to this from the IDPH. You know, Dan has talked about this extensively, about what politics and fear do to a state, a local populace, and the ability to use and manipulate that data for a political end. Dan's been all over that. The Department of Health, however, not reacting the way I think some would like them to react, recommending the layered approach to masks this fall in schools, essentially meaning different mask rules for different schools. IDPH says unvaccinated students should wear masks, but the state will not require it. So that's the IDPH guidance for the fall right now.
It's just guidance. It's not.
Well, and it's up to the local school district eventually to make that final determination. A lot of districts are mandating, a layered approach just like this. So some unvaccinated in middle schools and elementary schools, obviously you don't have much, if any, vaccination on the elementary side. 12 plus,
Or
12 under, still
risk.
Not. Well, they're still not vaccinated. Hardly at all, except for those with the serious comorbidities. So recommending some masking on the elementary level, recommending some masking on the middle school level, and pretty much allowing schools to make healthy determinations for their own populations in high school.
312-642-5600. Let's go to the phone lines. Chuck in Delavan. Chuck, we missed you on Friday. Where were you?
No, I keep calling and calling. I can't get through. There's 2 weeks in a row now. I couldn't get through.
Oh, well, we'll give you
what
a special.
I wanted to say was,
wait, Chuck, we'll give you a special. We'll give you a special hotline number.
Oh, I love a hotline. Okay. Hey, you know, when I used to sell eggs downtown, you know, the city makes a lot of money from Lollapalooza, but all my restaurants I used to sell eggs to, they lost money. These crazy kids that, you know, spray paint their hair blue and do all this stuff. It scares all the people that normally would come to Chicago and go and visit the restaurants. So when that goes there, the city reaps the reward of all these crazy people coming there. But none of the restaurants, they actually, their businesses and everything would go down because people would stay out of Chicago. So that was my comment.
All right. Thanks, Chuck, for the phone call. I will not ever go to Lollapalooza. I went one time and it looked like there were bodies all over. I didn't know if they were taking whiskey naps or overdosed on drugs. People were sleeping everywhere. And it was really, it was a juggernaut to get in there and get out. You have to have a golf cart, obviously, if you're carrying equipment. But after that, I thought, I'm never, ever going to
allow I don't have a problem with it. I'd like the ability for a municipality to have the freedom to host an event that exposes the city to worldwide, just give the city worldwide exposure. Plus, it's freedom. It's the ability to say, I'm going to gather with those who are like-minded and get together and enjoy myself and have a good time and try to do so responsibly. Though you and I have mentioned many years that that area gets destroyed.
Oh, the grass is, the parks. I mean,
but this year, because of the way the temperatures have swung and the heavy rain versus no rain that has come, it's already destroyed. So they can't do any more damage to that part of the park.
Were you ever on a softball team in Grant Park?
No, not ever.
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't play 16-inch. That doesn't qualify as softball.
Oh, okay. You're 12-inch?
I'm a, you know, I get
because of your daughter?
Mad when I say that. No, I played fast pitch when I was a little
younger. Oh, okay. Let's go to Kip in Stillman Valley. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Oh, we can hear you now. Hi, Kip.
Yeah, hey, I always get a buzz. I don't know on this phone around now. Anyway. Scott Gosselin from Face the Nation, the second week now on Sunday, said that those masks don't work. You have to have those high-quality masks in order to really protect yourself.
All
that's
right.
Twice now. I don't know if anybody ever caught up on that. But I hope Chicago doesn't lay down again and just let Larry Lightfoot tell you what to do with your city.
All right.
You know, you cannot be locked out ever again.
I know. We hope.
Damn.
We hope
Thank
that
you.
Will never happen. Thanks, Kip, for the phone call. And here's more of Dr. Emily Landon's her greatest hits.
So no matter what you hear, masks are important and masks are safe. Construction workers, healthcare workers, artists, all kinds of people have been wearing masks for ages without complications. So stop your fussing and put your mask on. Especially now that the weather is getting colder. Which brings me to another point.
Oh, boy.
Warmer air is more humid. It has more moisture in it. You know this. That humidity keeps those droplets that are coming out of our mouth and our nose juicy. And when they're wetter,
Ew.
They weigh more, and
Ew.
They fall to the ground closer.
Ew, juicy.
But when air cools down, it doesn't hold as much moisture. It's drier. And our HVAC systems are not awesome at putting moisture back into the air, even though they're pretty good at heating it. This you know because you have to buy more lotion. You complain about your dry skin all winter long. You may even buy a little humidifier that you put in the corner and realize it doesn't actually solve the whole problem because it's a bigger problem than you can solve with a little humidifier.
This is why Dr. Emily Landon is not at the Pritzker press conferences anymore.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy and... The war on terror against conservatives. Good piece by our friend Jerry Baker in the Wall Street Journal. How the revolutions tend to eat their own, and Mark Zuckerberg may be at the top of the hit list for today's Robespierres and Trotskys. Few companies have done more for Joe Biden than Facebook, he writes. But no good deed goes unpunished, and it's looking as though the social network is being readied for the left's tumbrils. Nice French Revolution reference. The president himself last week walked back, as they say, his startling accusation the company was killing people by hosting supposed misinformation about COVID vaccines. And you could be forgiven for thinking that the recent declaration the White House is now working closely with Facebook to identify further instances of so-called misinformation is not an indication of strains between government and Silicon Valley friend, but rather an ominous sign of eager public-private collaboration.
but these may prove to be more tactical feints in the left's larger strategic advance against this troublesome tech titan. It's an interesting take, because certainly that would be my, that was my first blush last week with the whole Vivek, Dr. Vivek Murthy truth ministry, and the Psaki pronouncements about the suggestions they had offered Twitter and Facebook, most notably, but the social media platforms, about how to control information they disagree with. You could take that as, oh, they're going to collaborate and use the private sector to impose their public will, the Biden administration is. Or you could take it the way Jerry Baker is suggesting it and saying, actually, it's an indication that they're struggling to rein in, particularly Facebook. And, you know, there may be a reckoning for Facebook at the hands of Mark Zuckerberg's fellow travelers. Very interesting. If there's any remaining doubt that the Democrats, going back to Baker, that the Democrats who control Washington have at least the ambition to mount a challenge to the awesome power of the big tech companies, it should have surely been banished by a succession of appointments to key jobs in the Biden administration. And he goes through the Jacobins that Biden has appointed, from Linda Kahn at FTC to Jonathan Cantor at the top antitrust position at Justice Department. Mr. Cantor is to Google what Ms. Kahn, and also Timothy Wu, who's called for the breakup of Facebook, are to Facebook and Amazon. So he's got folks that have a pretty negative disposition with respect to the power that big tech has. So it'd be very interesting to watch this play out, because on the one hand, you rightly recoil as a, you don't even have to be a conservative, just somebody who believes in free thinking and free speaking. You recoil at the cultural norms being advanced by the tech titans. On the other hand, they're not doing enough to genuflect before their government masters. Very, very interesting. The potential fissure here, and maybe an opportunity for conservatives to divide and conquer those who would seek to oppress dissenting views. Really, well, what, very interesting.
What do you think the government would do? I mean, they couldn't shut down Facebook.
They could break them up. They could, I mean,
or like break up Instagram, or what, who owns what?
They could move on these big tech companies to subject them to antitrust prosecutions.
Okay.
And so even if you win, you lose, you know, with the diversion of resources and mind share to fighting the government, which is why the social media, part of it is because they're ideological fellow travelers. The other reason is because, in part, they don't want to be subjected. I mean, this is why they appear before those congressional committees to sort of do their soft shoe routine, where they ask for regulation, right? They're essentially asking, you know, here's how we envision ourselves being regulated. Let's get agreement. We want to be regulated. We want to, you know, bend the knee before you, but only this far. And this is a way to avoid what some of the more aggressive opponents of the, at least the power that those companies have, may seek to do. Like some of these Biden appointees that, and like the Pocahontases of the world that want to see these companies broken up. It's really quite interesting. Also, too, remember, part of the attitude of those who on the left taking an antagonistic position towards Facebook, including the president and his spokesbeings, is because they're not doing enough to suppress information. The government minders want the Facebook minders to suppress more information, not less. Want you to be more aggressive, not less. And to the extent you're not more aggressive, we're going to get aggressive with you. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
they're like little idle threats that they drop here and there.
They're like,
and then it's mostly centered around right now is vaccinations, people that are fearing the vaccinations,
right,
and stories about people who have actually died after getting vaccinated.
Right.
They don't want you to hear it. They don't want to publicize. They do not want the mainstream media to focus on those stories ever.
But it could be anything. I mean, that's right. It's about vaccinations.
Yeah,
and that's
right,
what they were
right
talking about last week. But it could be Hunter Biden suppressing negative information about Hunter Biden. It could be promoting Russian collusion, conspiracy theories about Trump. It could be anything. How they see these social media titans, and this is, I think, where Jerry Baker is going, and he's right. they see them as their free speech hitmen.
Yep.
Right. Again, First Amendment is a restraint on us, but you're unrestrained. So here's some suggestions about how you should act in an unrestrained fashion.
It's like a communist country in the making.
An unrestrained fashion to restrain dissent. And I mean, it really, it's interesting. I mean, this is not political per se, but it is indicative of how far you can take this. There's no topic that is off limits. Facebook blocks women's "Why are men so dumb?" comment as hate speech. A Detroit woman.
That's so much fun.
Why
are men so dumb? That could take up a whole Saturday night.
Well, I mean, it's like Henny Youngman. If he were a comedian today, he couldn't. He couldn't do his "Take My Wife, Please" routines on Facebook or Twitter. A Detroit woman says she was temporarily banned from Facebook for "quote unquote" hate speech after participating in the time-honored tradition. Commenting on a meme labeling the opposite sex as dumb.
Oh.
At first I thought it was a joke. I'm like, yeah, right, I'm blocked. What? Candace King told Fox News about her timeout. The topic focused on how women will notice a difference in two different shades of purple, but devolved into a discussion over men's inability to differentiate nuanced shades of color. This is the hot topic trending on Facebook. The incendiary commentary that has to be minded over by Zuckerberg's troops. Yeah. So, again, obviously not political and not particularly interesting. And yet here are the minders. You go to the corner and put the dunce hat on. Very interesting. And, you know, this then extends in terms of cultural norms to all aspects of life. It's we're see playing out. So another story, sort of, again, culturally consistent with the topic. Mississippi mom Jennifer Booth surprised when her 9-year-old daughter Lydia came home from school and told her that she was not allowed to wear her "Jesus Loves Me" face mask anymore. Oh. The principal calls me in and she's like, "We're going to have Lydia swap her mask out." To have religious symbols or gestures on her mask was a problem. It's against school policy, but of course, the school handbook says, as it pertains to dress policy, refers to drug culture, profanity, and obscenities when it comes to speech or symbols. So now she's filed a lawsuit with Alliance for Defending Freedom, acting as her counsel against the school district because the entirety of your constitutional rights do not end at the schoolhouse door.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
And, you know, and again, the cultural power. You can't look at what's happening in larger culture and not look at the largest influencers on culture or the largest platforms driving the direction of culture. And this is really a pivot that we're seeing from the private sector and, of course, from these weaponized government agencies. There was a good piece in Breitbart. The big tech counterterrorism organization shifts focus from Islamic extremism to the quote-unquote far right. And you know what the far right is. Anybody who disagrees with the left.
Exactly.
Right. A counterterrorism organization formed by some of the biggest U.S. tech companies, including Facebook and Microsoft, significantly expanding types of extremist content shared between firms in a key database, aiming to crack down on material from white supremacists and far-right militias. The Global Internet Forum to Counterterrorism's database, focused on videos and images from terrorist groups on the United Nations list, and so it's largely consisted of content from Islamist extremist organizations. But over the next few months, the group will add manifestos from other publications and leaks flagged by the UN initiative Tech Against Terrorism. And now on the face of it, you say, well, okay, fine. I mean, I'm not in the business of defending any organization that seeks to use violence for political ends. But the problem is, think about the organizations that make designations that then are accepted by these platforms, like the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Southern Poverty Law Center just designates conservative groups, pro-family organizations as hate groups. So once you start expanding your scope to counter quote-unquote terrorism, and once you start sort of dumbing down the definition of domestic terrorism or terrorism generally, now those who disagree with you, those who oppose marriage redefinition, those who promote school choice, those who expose the 1619 Project for the flimflammery that it is, the historical inaccuracies that it contains, are those going to be designated as hate people or hate organizations by the Southern Poverty Law Center? And then how long before these social media platforms, under pressure from that government, as we were discussing per Jerry Baker's piece, are expanding their censorious disposition towards different groups, are characterizing them as terrorist organizations, and then sharing across all of these platforms, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Twitter, Reddit, Verizon, Airbnb, MailChimp. They're all in this counterterrorism consortium, Internet counterterrorism consortium. This is not conspiracy theorizing. I'm saying these are enterprises that have been set up. This is the conduct we've seen from them. And these are some questions and I think suggestions about where this could very easily go, as we've seen the left apply the oil spot technique in all aspects of culture. And all of the focus, and you hear it from our military, the greatest threat to the United States is white supremacy.
Oh, please.
And so, again, the enforcement arm of a government that doesn't want to have blood on its hands. That's what these big tech companies are coming. And to the extent that you resist being as aggressive as they want to be, is to the extent that maybe they come for you next, Mark Zuckerberg. Dave and Lansing, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I've heard you attack Facebook for 15 minutes now. All you want is more, more, more. Leave the $1 billion censoring against Tea Party and MAGA company alone now. I mean it.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no idea what your point is.
The speech, they're a company. They should be able to make people be quiet about bad stuff.
And
they're a company.
Yeah, I got that, David. I didn't say anything to the contrary. Do you have you have no concerns about the choices they make or the potentially the collaboration with the government acting as a de facto arm of the state in terms of what sources are determined to be credible, what content is legitimate? You have if it was you running the company, you would want it to be a free marketplace of ideas, or you would want to stamp out people who disagree with you?
They should make people be quiet that are bad ones. All you want is more, more, more.
Make people be quiet who are bad ones. Right, David. And here's this question for you to ponder for the rest of the morning. Who determines who are the bad ones? Who determines who are the credible ones? Who determines who are the correct ones? I'm not done. A small group of people at Facebook influenced by the federal government? Or would you like that to be determined through persuasion and people who are making the best arguments and providing the most compelling evidence in support of their arguments in marketplaces of ideas? I'm not talking about regulating Facebook. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about cultural norms and what kind of society you want to live in and what norms you'd like to see reflected in some of the most influential institutions in our society. You see the difference? I don't think you do. Well, thanks for the call. Candace in Mount Pleasant.
Good morning. I'd like to kick David in a shriveled up you know what.
All right.
Amy.
Yeah, you have to go. Oh, now you have a timeout. You have a timeout.
Wait. No, I'm not done. I have a point to make.
Okay.
Amy, I saw your commercial last night. And secondly, okay, remember last week when you were with John, I said, get the article from townhall.com. Our people are more educated on COVID, but they should have memorized this list of diseases on the mask. And every day, you guys should go through the list real quick because people need to, you know.
I keep tweeting to the pro-maskers and the moms who are celebrating the fact that CPS is wearing masks.
But you need to read the list.
I read the list.
The mom, pneumonia, TB, meningitis,
E. coli,
encephalitis, food poisoning, Lyme disease, diphtheria, Legionnaire's disease, meningitis, sepsis, and staphylococcus.
All right. Thank you, Candace.
Thanks, Candace.
Thanks.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, please help us by informing your Champagne Socialists and Mercedes Marxist friends that that BLM bumper sticker they're sporting, the hate has no home here yard sign.
I love that. And it's in Arabic, too, the one in our neighborhood.
That's not going to be enough.
Why
it
not,
turns out.
Dan?
What a surprise. An organization called Dallas Justice Now published an open letter to wealthy white liberals of wealthy communities around Dallas, like Highland Park. Talk is not enough. Commit yourself towards taking action and making sacrifices to correct centuries of injustice. Open up spaces for Black and Latinx communities by refusing to send your kids to Ivy League and U.S. News and World Report top 50 schools, and encourage friends, neighbors, and family members to do the same. Many people initially thought this, and by the way, these letters are circulating in these Tony neighborhoods in the greater Dallas area. Many people initially thought this was like a put-on. This was a parody. And I don't think it is. But even if it was, what's the difference? This is the actual view of the real world Black Lives Matter and their cultural Marxist fellow travelers. So it's impossible to parody. The Babylon Bee is having trouble parodying what's actually happening on the ground in this country today. So whether this is a parody or not, it is the substantive position of the Chardonnay Antifa that you find in places like Naperville and Hinsdale and Glen Ellen and River Forest and the North Shore. That is their position. So now they're trying to attach action to the rhetorical positions, the easy rhetorical positions that people have taken, and good for them. And I don't think it's a hoax because Michelle Washington, founder of Dallas Justice Now, the organization that put out this college pledge, she's pretty straightforward about it. In the civil rights movement, our white allies risked their lives to end cruel Jim Crow laws. Yet now many people think they can get by just by posting on social media. It's hurtful to those of us who have dedicated our lives to social justice when they think that is enough to remedy hundreds of years of oppression. Many wealthy white folks, including those who live in the 95% white park cities, Dallas, think they are allies because they put up a Black Lives Matter sign or parade black people like animals at their charity galas, that somehow they aren't part of the problem. They are the problem. If whites want to be allies, they must make sacrifices. So
what are you willing to sacrifice?
Well, let's start with your kids and their college education. Don't send them to an Ivy League school. Don't send them to a top 50 school, according to U.S. News and World Report. What's wrong with that? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. If you're a right-thinking parent, you probably don't want your kids going to an Ivy League school in the first place for different reasons than Michelle Washington is advancing. But, you know, maybe the two roads will intersect in terms of reasons not to send your kids to the Ivy League schools. Right?
Got to sacrifice something, right? If you're all in, huh?
Well, let's connect the dots for people.
Okay.
Absolutely. Miss Washington, since their creation, top educational institutions have been vehicles for the perpetuation of white supremacy. Most top universities only open their doors to our community in the 1960s. I love that it's her community. But even then, have done everything possible to make us feel like second-class citizens. Ivy League and other top 50 schools provide the best vehicles for upward mobility, particularly for marginalized communities. Yet a vast majority of those spots at these institutions are taken by wealthy white folks. Well, and some spots are taken at those institutions by people who don't belong there and are only there because of their color. Isn't that true? And some people are precluded from spots at those schools because of their color. Those would be called Asian Americans, right? Miss Washington? Don't we understand that from Harvard and Yale? Complicated when you
does
get into the...
Does she even know what happened there?
I'm sure she does. It's complicated when you get into the, you know, identity as a qualifier as opposed to, you know, the quality of your academic record and extracurriculars and test scores and so on and so forth. You know, merit as opposed to identity. You're in, you're out, you're too successful, you're not successful enough. We're just going to rig the game one way or the other, for you or against you, based on what you are or are not doing. What about it, though? I mean, I would think that you would want to circulate this pledge at your church on Sunday, Amy. See if you can get some signatories. Maybe start that. Maybe Lakeview, that cult that you go to, they could be the Chicago chapter for this college pledge.
I think they'd agree, but not when it came to their children.
Oh.
I would have to say that they'd have to, you know, well, there's an exception. You can only push them so far. And my church, by the way, went
my
back
kids,
to.
My kids are the exception, right? That's
yeah,
their
attitude. That's
right.
Yeah. Yeah. The mask mandate, because, you know, to protect their kids. And they, when the song we sang was Be Not Afraid. Oh, the irony. But yeah, no, I could see them because they all have the Black Lives Matter. We still have that up at church, you know, all those signs and home has hate has no home here and different languages.
Well, this is the same conversation we have about critical race theory in the schools and the lack of diversity. We need a diversity coordinator to inform our hiring practices. Hey, you honky superintendent, be the change you wish to see. Fall on the sword and make room for a person of color. A marginalized person from a marginalized community. So, yes, so you define it.
How many female superintendents are there
to replace you?
Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah. What about that? I love this pledge. I mean, I appreciate Dallas Justice Now and Michelle Washington. I really do. Because it's one thing for us to talk about these positions people take in the abstract. It's another thing when somebody on their side wants to make their commitment concrete. What are you willing to put up? I love the bluff being called. It's all fun at the Hinsdale Starbucks with your, you know, card-carrying members of the Chardonnay Antifa chapter there.
Chardonnay.
It's all fun there. When now it's a place your John Hancock on the dotted line and say, I'm not sending my kid to a top 50 school in America.
No. People are getting a little squishy.
No.
Well, for everyone except for my son or my daughter. Well, they're such hypocrites. Come on.
Can't I just write a check to Black Lives Matter? Can't I just pay an indulgence to get out of really attaching policy consequences in a personal way to the positions I take? Oh, no, I know. I get it. And, I mean, the whole thing, by the way, Michelle Washington has it wrong on so many levels, but one of them is the fact that top 50 schools provide the best vehicles for upward mobility. I mean, I get the networking aspect of it, but if you really understand what's happening in America today, it's so much how you go to college, not where you go to college.
Right.
I think it's more and more that way with each passing day. But, of course, they're not interested in that. They're interested in keeping score based on, you know, the institutions they want to control. It's not so much about the performance of particular students or whether Harvard or Yale is a good fit for this person or that person. They don't care. It's just a numbers game and a power play with everything. They care so much about marginalized communities. No, they don't. I care about them as a cudgel, a political cudgel. That's it. But that's the same position that these ghastly pea hat wearing suburbanites have taken too. So I love getting them put on. I love seeing them put on the spot. Absolutely. Kudos. Dave in Romeoville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, I just want to remind you, this isn't completely new. When the Obamas won the presidency, there was talk they should send their kids to the D.C. public schools, and their being there would really, you know, force them to improve the schools, that, you know, would bring security and a better education. And the Obamas acted like they seriously considered it and said, well, no, I think the best fit for our kids will be, you know, the same private school all the other senators.
Oh, Sidwell friends. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, thanks for the call,
Even when they lived here in Chicago, they didn't send their kids to public schools. They went to lab, UC Lab.
Why would they? They're not insane.
Okay.
Right?
Right. No, you're right.
Why would anybody volunteer to send your kid to a terrible Chicago public school if you don't have to? Or a terrible school generally, anywhere in the country, if you don't have to?
Yeah, what politician sends their kids to a public school?
I mean, I'm sure some do, but I mean, it's like if you're you know, you're living on the North Shore and you send your kid to New Trier, that's not exactly what we're talking about.
Right.
Although, I mean, I think these schools have reputations that belie the actual quality of the academic setting. I mean, I would say if I lived in Hinsdale, would I send my kid to Hinsdale Central or South? Absolutely not. If I lived on the North Shore, would I send him to New Trier?
No, not a chance.
And now, if I had kids, or when
you have two hypothetical children.
When my imaginary kids are ready to go to college,
yeah, where are they
going to
go?
Well, they're not going to. I mean, they're not going to any state school.
Okay.
I mean, you just can't do it if you don't have to. You know, if your choices are otherwise not limited, and you know, the whole top 50 school and the credentialing and so on and so forth that Michelle Washington at Dallas Justice Now is obsessing about. I mean, she totally misses the point. And this is, look, Thomas Sowell wrote about this 30 years ago, for goodness sakes, inside American Higher Education, and how you're setting up kids for failure when they don't have the academic chops to be where they're at. And they're just there based on their identity. You're not helping marginalized communities, people of color, those who are there mainly to fill a quota.
Right.
Not because they have the same academic chops as other students. That's what I'm saying.
What if they're Hispanic and they have the academic chops?
Yeah, I don't care. Well, I don't care.
It's the
quality of the work product, the quality of the record, the quality of the student. I said admissions policy. I've said this before. I said when I ran for governor, admissions policy at U of I should be like trying out for the CSO. You don't see anything other than an application number and the record. You don't know male, female. You don't know race. You don't know religion. You don't know anything else.
You just hear the sound.
Yeah. You can either play the violin or you can't.
Yep.
And I know, you know, these are judgment calls. You know, sometimes it's hard to do apples to apples comparisons with somebody's academic record or, you know, high school record and stuff with extracurriculars and volunteer work and all the different things that kids can do. But, I mean, you know, within a fairly narrow deviation, you get the best students if you're just looking at the quality of what they've put together, both academically and otherwise. And that's the way it should be. But that's not the way that these folks want it. And that's not the way that these suburbanites say they want it either, which is why I say again, thank you, Dallas Justice Now, for waking people up in Highland Park and those well-heeled areas of Dallas. And please spread the pledge. Be fascinating to see who's willing to sign up for it. And then, oh, by the way, don't trust the signature. Make sure you track and find out where their kids went to school. Andrew and Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I just have one simple comment, a bit of advice for all those who are feeling oppressed and disenfranchised. It's, do your homework, study for your test, and get good grades.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else will come after that.
Yep.
That is a revolutionary idea, Andrew. Thanks for
work
the call.
Hard, play hard.
Yeah. That's it.
Appreciate it. Yeah. That's about it. And it's interesting because, I mean, there's a piece even in Politico, because this is all of us sort of the same kind of critical race theory, that Dems are getting a little bit jumpy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're thinking maybe this is a bit of an overreach. Feel a boomerang coming on. Well, I'll tell you what.
I don't want to lose the House.
You know, it'd be interesting. It'd be interesting. You know, you start to make some of these go-along get-alongers who just want to be invited to the cocktail parties and socialize. you start making them uncomfortable, because now to be part of the in crowd, I got to commit to not sending my kid to a top 50 school. Maybe I'll just quietly go the other way come election time.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Time now for another reason why Dan Proft is single.
A bitter divorce between a top New York City spine surgeon and his beauty queen wife was quickly settled on Monday yesterday.
Oh, that's good news.
Dr. Hanjo Kim and his estranged spouse, Regina Turner, a former Miss Connecticut USA, put their split to bed before a public hearing scheduled at 10 a.m.
Yeah, no one wants to take that public.
Well, what they didn't want to take public, apparently, is the accusation that Dr. Hanjo Kim filed in court accusing his wife of moonlighting as a high-priced hooker. You can marry a Miss Connecticut USA and...
She needed money, and she had to provide for herself, and he wasn't providing for her financially. I'm trying to.
Doc says that his former wife pocketed nearly $700,000 in cash from John since 2015.
That's a lot of money.
He filed for divorce in December 2020 after finding a racy text message from another man on a computer in the couple's Upper East Side home. Sounds like. $675,000 in cash deposits between 2015 and 2021, according to the financial records filed in court documents. I don't know. I think he's sort of hazard. Sounds like he's got her sort of dead to rights to me.
I think he's going to win the case.
There was a Law and Order episode, which is based on a true story about this, like these, these bored suburban housewives in New York that were call girls.
Right.
Acting as call girls. I mean, can't you just put a hate has no home sign in the yard and just call it a day? I mean, do you have to take it this far? All right. So, marry a beauty queen and get a whore.
Hey.
Another reason why Dan Proft is single.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I love this story. New York Post. Olympic broadcasts trying hard not to sexualize female athletes. They're getting a lot of help from the female athletes, too. You will not see in our coverage some things we have been seeing in the past with details and close-ups on bodies and parts of the body, said the chief executive of Olympic Broadcasting Services. What we can do is make sure that our coverage does not highlight or feature in any particular way what people are wearing. Sure. Okay. Well, it's going to be tough to... avoid noticing what people are wearing since, beach volleyball uniforms, track and field uniforms, gymnastics uniforms are relatively revealing because of, the need to have maximum flexibility and so forth. I think this is all rather obvious, but I love the sexualizing. By the way, try not sexualizing Alicia Schmidt. You see that runner, that German runner, Alicia Schmidt. Ooh, yeah. A hurdler. I think she's a hurdler. Yeah. Trying not to sexualize women at the Olympics. Doing a good job. Megan Rapinoe helping a lot with that. And the women's U.S. women's soccer team, generally speaking. Also that Costa Rican gymnast, Luciana Alvarado. She knelt and raised a fist for Black Lives Matter. Yeah, mm-hmm. This must be why it's at a 30-year low. But, thinking about the Olympics and this debate that we never had, Amy, that I want to have about the sport of the future. No, it's not skateboarding. Pickleball.
Oh, pickleball. I love pickleball.
Pickleball versus volleyball is the sport of the future.
Ooh.
And there's some resistance to pickleball taking hold across America.
Why?
Because of the noise. Yeah.
Wait, Justin, do you have any pickleball drops? Or he probably doesn't even know what that is, because remember, he doesn't know who Joe Namath was.
In Ridgewood, New Jersey, the pop-up sound is unending. It's noise pollution, said Judy Mack, who lives steps away from the town's pickleball court. Absolutely, the court should be shut down. The fight in Ridgewood, New Jersey has gotten so heated, police have been called to the courts. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, the clientele is like the cast of Cocoon, but okay. Ridgewood Village Council spent $20,000 on sound blocking fencing, mandating players use noise reducing balls and paddles.
No, there's no way.
Because strict controls and hours of play and so on and so forth. So there's always going to be a NIMBY problem with, you know, athletic fields, including pickleball courts. But generally speaking, do people play pickleball? Because, I mean, they're building pickleball courts everywhere, not just in the South and not just in senior communities. You see it at country clubs around Chicago.
In park districts everywhere. Palatine Park District just put one in. Chicago, now we have two at Montrose and Western in that park there. And I'm glad. I love pickleball. It's perfect because tennis is a little too rough for me, for people of our age. And
who's our? You and the mouse in your pocket? Yeah.
Because it's our time and it's our age. So tennis is too hard. Ping pong is not physical enough. But pickleball, man, I could play that for hours. Elk Grove, the Pavilion Fitness Center, we have a pickleball group that every Friday. You can just grab a partner. I can take you. And if I had known you were going to do this segment, I would have brought my brand new pickleball paddle.
You're part of a regular game, weekly game?
Yeah. I could have brought my new paddle. I call it the Dragon, into the studio. Mm-hmm. The Dragon's, I'll tweet out a picture of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Oh, here it is. Here it is.
That's tennis.
That's pickleball. That is pickleball.
It doesn't sound like
there's
that
my
ball.
New racket. Huh? The Dragon? Nice. These things are expensive, though.
Yeah.
It's about $79-$80. I got it on sale for $42 at Dick's. And
I'm envisioning some sort of like Balls of Fury reprisal instead of ping pong. But yeah.
Well, have you tried it yet?
I played it once.
You would be great.
I liked
pickleball.
It. It's fun.
But do you know the rules?
Yeah,
because I hate people that don't say the score before you start. Well, you have to, like 0-0-1, meaning 0-0. I'm the first person serving on our team, and then if you're on my team, you serve next. You say 0-0-2. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, as I play more, I'm sure I'll be able to keep up with the vernacular. It doesn't seem that complicated.
No, but it's so much fun.
Yeah, I you know, since we're all getting old and America's getting old and we're all going to die soon.
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, you might as well. This is, as you say, the physical activity that people enjoy. So, I mean, I would like to see it in an Olympic sport at some point, first a demonstration sport. And then, because.
Well, did you watch skateboarding,
Because then you could have like 65-year-old Olympic athletes.
Right. That'll be so much fun. But did you watch skateboarding?
No.
Oh, it was, I mean. Why would I watch that? No idea in the world why that is an Olympic sport. That is.
Well, I don't.
I mean, it takes talent. I'm not taking away from, you know, what they've accomplished, but I was watching it thinking, what in God's name? Looks like they're just skateboarding around at a park, you know, jumping up on rails, then some stairs, and then the big, you know, half pipe thing.
No.
Breakdancing. We need breakdancing.
Breakdancing's in.
Well, it's an exhibition. It's
a demonstration sport.
A demonstration sport.
Yeah.
I would watch that over skateboarding.
What do you think? So, but pickleball, since you're a volleyball coach and you're a pickleball player, where do you think this is going? Mm-hmm. And, you know, since you're obsessed with sports, particularly sports at the, like, grade school and high school level, you know, you're probably as best positioned as anyone to know what the future of sport in America is going to feature.
I honestly think that girls and boys volleyball is going to become a professional sport, like the WNBA and the NBA. I think people will, if you get a good league together.
Except it's going to be the opposite in terms of popularity.
Mm. Women, then men's.
Yeah.
Yeah, the women can play first, and then the men's team could take the court after.
No, but it'll be opposite in popularity.
What do you mean? You don't think people will go to stadiums to watch if they've...
Women's volleyball will be more popular than men's volleyball, so it'd be the opposite of the NBA.
Okay, all right, yeah, right.
Men's
but don't
volleyball,
tell him like that. He's a big WNBA fan.
Men's volleyball only exists because women's volleyball, just like the WNBA, only exists because of the NBA.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's true. Yeah. I mean, financially, the WNBA wouldn't exist without the
no,
NBA
because the NBA subsidizes
it.
Them.
Yeah.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, and then a quick comment.
What do you think about the protests over the sticking a volleyball and then the sexualization piece? Because there's not going to be much talk about sexualizing pickleball. But there is going to be talk about sexualizing volleyball. The
German team?
Well, the German team, that's the gymnastics team.
Well, they're unitards instead of a leotard.
Yeah. Well, whatever. I mean, that's...
Well, they did it because they're sick of the sexualization of women. So they stood out and they made us, you know, took a stand and decided to wear those uniforms.
It's completely irrelevant. It's so stupid. And by the way, there was not a lot of people sexualizing them. I hate to break it to them. But regardless, it's still just a skin tight thing. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm talking about beach volleyball.
It's not good for the sport.
I'm talking about beach volleyball. What about the, you know, you just heard.
Oh, they're wearing bikini bottoms because that's what you wear to the beach. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those handball players from Norway who were fined because they put on the little Spanx instead of their bikini bottoms.
What was the, but there was a protest, one of the teams protested, and they wore, like, Umbro shorts instead of the bikini bottoms.
Yeah, that's the Norwegian team, and they got fined $1,400, and guess who's paying the fine? Pink. She came forward and decided to pay their fine.
The singer Pink?
The singer Pink, yes. Because she's done with the sexualization of women, too.
Oh,
I mean, give me a break. I'm sorry,
There's nothing sexual about Pink's videos and her music career. No, of course not.
Okay. No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she didn't use sex to sell and become a number one artist across the world. I mean, of course she did. And she's not wearing a unitard when she's up on there spinning in a rope.
So you're pro standard issue beach volleyball uniforms?
Yes.
You're pro
handball, go back to the bikini bottoms. Gymnastics, don't wear the unitard. You got to see your legs. That's part, if your knees are straightened all the way, that's part of gymnastics.
Well, you can still see that.
But it's not as pronounced in the unitard. Well, I mean, I used to be a gymnast, believe it or not, before I started growing and spent years in gymnastics. And I would never in my life put a unitard on. Uh-uh. It'd be too confining.
You were a gymnast. Flow.
Yeah, I was.
You can't keep a cup of coffee upright on that desk. But you're telling me you're on a balance beam?
I used to be able to do a back walk over on the balance beam. I kid you not. I was at the Des Plaines Ladoff YMCA. Ask Lisa Ryman and Heidi Hoffman.
I will ask them.
Find them.
I'm going to ask Lisa and Heidi.
Lisa and Heidi.
Yeah. Is there a home video?
I've got pictures.
You know, like caricatures drawn by a sketch artist. I don't know what was available at the time technology-wise.
I'll bring in the pictures tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It would be great. You know, the little like 3x4s.
By the way, on a related note, in the sports world,
yes.
These WWF and now E wrestlers are dropping like flies.
Oh, well, it's passed.
Super Porky is dead at 58.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Do you have a picture of Super Porky?
Yeah, he's right here.
Oh, well, he's Super Porky.
Eating a full head of ham.
Is he pregnant with triplets?
No.
Wow.
He died after his legs couldn't take his weight. Note to Governor Pritzker.
We do have the Illinois State Fair coming up. That's where he cracked his femur, remember, because he was standing at the fair?
Right. One too many fried Snickers bars on the stick.
Whew.
Chad on the South Side.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys think of male volleyball players, but on the South Side, we think they're a little less than masculine. Sorry about that. There's football, baseball, handball.
Yeah, Mount Carmel doesn't feature a male volleyball team, do they?
Yes, they do.
Do they?
Yes.
Do they?
They have a male's volleyball team, Mount Carmel.
I hope not.
Schools do, because there's a lot of scholarship money for D1, D2, D3.
Mount Carmel has a male volleyball team? Are you sure those are men? It's not women playing? Even
guys,
though it's a boys' school.
There's my boys play volleyball, and I'm a boys' volleyball coach. Watch it.
Well, I remember Karch Karai.
I loved Karch Karai.
Yeah, he was a great volleyball player. I mean, I'm not saying these guys aren't good athletes and all that.
Connor, he's got a 38 vertical jump because these boys are not going to make it in basketball. They cannot get a scholarship in basketball. And the next sport to do, you could do rowing to try and get a scholarship.
Why can't you get a scholarship in basketball?
Because people are taller and bigger and can jump higher, Dan.
38 inch vertical?
Mm-hmm.
That's D1 in terms of vertical. And how tall is he?
6'6".
6'6" and a 38 vertical, and that's just a matter of playing the game. Ball handling, shooting.
But I'm saying there's more opportunities in volleyball. Volleyball is a great sport. Have you ever watched a girls volleyball game?
Yeah, I watched the beach volleyball in the Olympics occasionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like that, but throw in four more girls.
I played. I mean, I like little games, but
yeah, we played in Cabo.
It's a fun sport, and I get it. I appreciate that they're good athletes, but
I think it'll be a professional sport. They're only getting
full rides in male volleyball, particularly because they're subsidized by the revenue sports. I mean, it's true. It's not a revenue sport.
No, I know. I hear what you're saying.
Mary Kay in Western Springs.
Oh, hi, Mary Kay.
Hi, Amy. Hi, Maria. You know what I love about this pickleball is anyone can play. Dan, you can get really...
Even me.
Yeah, even you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is my chance and yours, Amy. We could get to the Olympics, you know? I mean, if they put it would be a great Olympic sport. It's so fun to watch. You know, they have these huge tournaments now, and they're building courts, you know, all over the suburbs. The only thing is it's hard to get a court. You know, you have to wait and rotate in with these seniors that are very, you know,
they're particular about their court time.
They are. They're picky about who they let play. And if you don't know the rules, they're going to rotate. You're going to lose anyway, and you're going to rotate right out and sit in the bleachers in the sun until somebody will let you back on the court. You know, it's a blast though. And it's absolutely where competitive sports are going these days. Really.
I bet you're going to be great at pickleball.
You are too. You know, if you play once a week, yeah, and I'm short, so I can move still, and my knees aren't completely trash. So, yeah, if you're Dan, you gotta do it. It's a blast.
I'll show up to play a pickup pickleball game in Western Springs with you, Mary Kay.
We'll have to wait. Right, we'll have to wait. But it's like golf. You can golf for your whole life. You can swim for your whole life. You can play tennis. If you're, old lady tennis, you know, they don't move. They just hit the ball and place it. And you can do the same in pickleball. You can get wildly competitive. It's a blast. Come on, Dan. Let's go.
Thanks for the call, Mary Kay. You know, it's funny you say that. There was a piece in the Wall Street Journal, a cardiologist who switched from tennis to pickleball and now into his 70s. He just talks about that, and he talks about the humbling thing about games like that, where you have somebody who's, you know, proficient with the hand-eye coordination piece of it, but maybe is not so mobile, and they're just, you know, dropping shots everywhere and making somebody much younger and in better shape run all around and just,
ball placement. Good. Put the ball where your competitor is not. And real quick, did you see this breaking news? Simone Biles is pulling out of team gymnastics competition. This just happened. 24-year-old gymnast, considered to be the greatest gymnast of all time, apparently suffered an injury during the vault. That's awful.
She was one of the only athletes I was really interested in.
I know. Same with everyone. Everyone knows Simone Biles, but she's out. Oh, that's awful.
Dave and McCook.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, Dan, I got to one-up you. I had to Google that German hurdler.
Yeah.
Not too bad, but I want you to check out the female Russian shot putting squad. They are hot.
Really?
Female Russian shot put.
Olga and Vlada.
Olga and Vlada?
Of course.
One weighs 290 and the other one's 307, I think.
Well, you know, everybody has their type, Dave, and now we know yours.
That's right.
Thanks for the call.
Whoa.
Yeah, compare that to Alicia Schmidt. You see Alicia Schmidt?
Whoa. No.
The German hurdler. See that?
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Take it easy.
Do you want to see what this one?
Towel off over there.
Do you want to see this over here?
James and Westmont.
Yeah, I heard that's one of the reasons why they won't allow sumo wrestling, because it's over-sexualized. You don't want to, you know, make
exactly
it uncomfortable.
Sure, they're in those tiny little bottoms. Exactly.
Here you go.
Exactly. Very good. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Here you go, Dan.
Don't stop sexualizing those sumo wrestlers. Yeah. Is that Chris Farley or one of those Russian shot putters? Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Thanks for taking my call, Amy and Dan. You're talking about the future of sports or whatever. What about having robots play? For the last 10 years, I go to the University of Illinois and see the annual robot competition that's FIRST Robotics. And then yesterday they showed on a video of a robot shooting baskets. one after another on TV. It was unbelievable.
Well,
so that's the future.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Same problem, though, with the robotics competition. The uniform, sexualizing those those engineer athletes and their skimpy pocket protectors that they wear.
Oh, those are so hot. Real quickly, we've been invited to Oak Park Country Club to play you and I together against another couple in pickleball.
Oak Park has pickleball?
Of course. Dan.
I've been there. I don't remember, but
they
okay.
Yeah, you can take a tennis court and turn it into a pickleball court real easy.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right, very good.
I've got a paddle for you, a real nice one. But it's not the dragon. I get the dragon.
And I get to play golf, too.
Actually, I'll make that part of the deal.
Yeah, there you go. All right, very good. All right, good. Well, then we've accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. I got a golf invitation.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Jen Psaki, the White House spokesman, on the administration's North Star when it comes to COVID policy.
First, I would say for any of these recommendations, we are always going to be guided by our North Star, and that is the CDC and our health and medical experts. So, as I said last week, it would be actually surprising and odd if our health and medical experts were not having an active discussion about how to best protect the American people. And there, of course, is an active discussion about a range of steps that can be taken, as there has been from the first day of this administration. Certainly, the surge in cases among unvaccinated because of the Delta variant prompts even more discussion about what actions can be taken. But we are going to the CDC looks at data. They look at data across the country in a range of regions across the country. And if they make an assessment, we will, of course, be here to follow their guidance.
The frustrating thing about so much of this coverage is just the lack of pushback. Why is Yale epidemiologist Harvey Risch wrong about masks and about kids wearing masks in school? But comment on that. Since Tony Fauci only goes to friendly places other than when he has to appear before a Senate committee that Rand Paul's on, you never get anybody asking, like we ask here, people, well, comment on what Tony Fauci said or react to what this other infectious disease expert or epidemiologist
right.
had to say about the vaccines or mask wearing or the full panoply of topics under the heading COVID.
Yeah, and it's Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. And actually, every single day, because Dr. Fauci's a media ho, if you know what I mean.
Well, but
one pushes back and asks him and presents him with other studies that have been done.
So this is since we can't get people to interact side by side who don't share the same viewpoint, unfortunately, in most media outlets. You have to be able to challenge people with opposing viewpoints, have them react, see if what their response is makes any sense. As we have international travel bans extended and we have mask mandates being reinstituted in L.A. County, in New York for New York City workers, in Savannah, Georgia.
I know, Savannah, Georgia. Why?
You have federal agencies.
New Orleans.
You have vaccine mandates, too, the VA being the first federal agency, but also city workers in New York City. California to require vaccine or testing for state workers.
All state workers. And if you don't comply, guys, you have to weekly test, which is ridiculous. In order to keep your job. What America is this that we're living in? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line.
Former New York Times reporter Alex Berenson has a good piece on this sort of general topic at his Substack. He writes in conclusion, then I'll get to some of the examples he gives, which are very good. The reluctance of the Faucis of the world to deal honestly with real numbers, as opposed to sensationalize, hyperbolize numbers and threats, no cost benefit. The truth is messy, writes Berenson. the vaccines are clearly far from the miracle that the initial reports promised them to be, yet they appear to offer decent protection in the short term. But they don't end transmission, and their effectiveness is fading fast in the most vulnerable people. Their side effects are real and worsen with the second dose. Their greatest benefit by far is for the elderly. Instead of admitting these truths, the vaccine fanatics insist on offering numbers they must know are false, as increasingly they attack those Americans who choose not to be vaccinated and demonize those of us who point out this truth. So what is he talking about? For example, he's talking about Tony Fauci saying something that is just demonstrably false with, again, you know, one of his home-cooked interrogators, that yapping terrier on Meet the Press, Chuck Todd. Fauci said, if you look at the number of deaths, about 99.2% of them are unvaccinated. About 0.8% are vaccinated. No vaccine is perfect, but when you talk about the avoidability of hospitalization and death, it's really sad and tragic that most of these are avoidable and preventable.
But old people die.
No, even, well, the math.
The math.
99.2 of them are unvaccinated. Only 0.8% are vaccinated. Fauci's answer would imply that only about 80 vaccinated people, 0.8% of 10,000, died in June. That's just a lie. They're off by at least a factor of five, probably 10 or more. A part of this is categorization, as Berenson points out, and this is the, you know, the messiness of it. You have to have an attention span greater than that of a gnat to be able to process information and understand what's happening. The way that the U.S. categorizes the vaccinated, if you've had one shot of Pfizer or Moderna, you're not vaccinated. Had two, you're still not vaccinated, not for 2 weeks after your second jab. Most other countries have fully vaccinated, partially vaccinated, and unvaccinated categories. The truth is, writes Berenson, if we were treating vaccines like other drugs, we would include the partially vaccinated cases in the vaccinated category because the adverse effects, including adverse outcomes, including death, have occurred after treatment has begun. The United States does the opposite. When it reports stats on vaccine hospitalizations or deaths, it ignores partially vaccinated people. They're lumped in with those who have never received a dose as unvaccinated, even though we know that the first dose provides a significant level of protection. And he goes on beyond the classification issue. Fauci and Murthy lied about what percentage of coronavirus deaths are now occurring in fully vaccinated people. It's much higher than the sub 1% figures they offered. This is really interesting, too, breaking this down. The United States has had roughly 250,000 deaths from COVID this year. It's had closer to 300,000 since the first dose was offered on December 14th. But more than half of those deaths occurred in December and January, when essentially no one was fully vaccinated. Not even 2% of Americans were fully vaccinated as of February 1. And deaths began to fall in February. After March 1, when only 1 in 13 Americans were fully vaccinated, they plunged further. In the 5 months since, perhaps 80,000 people have died from or with COVID, fewer than died in January alone. Berenson continues, vaccine advocates rarely acknowledge the fact that deaths started dropping long before most people had received shots. In reality, even acknowledging that many people who received vaccines in January and February were older and vulnerable, seasonality and herd immunity seem to have a greater impact on broad COVID trends than vaccinations. But for the advocates, the big winter death numbers are handy in one way. They make the breakthrough number seem tiny. The breakthrough COVID cases, meaning you're vaccinated and you get COVID. Essentially, all the fully vaccinated breakthrough cases and deaths have come since May. As of June 21st, the CDC reported 750 deaths nationally. As of July 19th, the number had risen to 1,141. By itself, those figures prove Fauci lied when he told Chuck Todd on July 4th that 0.8% of the deaths are in vaccinated people. The CDC's current reporting of about 24,000 deaths since May 1, which would mean that a fully vaccinated deaths have been about 4% of the total since then, five times what Fauci claimed. So, and again, this is not, he's not anti-vax. We've talked to him. We've had this particular conversation. But there is this question that he raises, which is a really important one. you just went through the figures, the CDC's own numbers, the CDC's own classification. Why do you have to lie by a factor of at least five like Fauci did on Meet the Press? Why? Why can't you tell the truth? Why do you have to walk away from what we know to be true? Illinois is now reporting 159 deaths, breakthrough cases. New York, 94 through mid-June. Massachusetts, 80. North Carolina, 61. Washington State, 45. Oklahoma, 19 as of mid-July. 458 deaths in geographically diverse states with a combined population about 50 million, which is about one-seventh of the U.S. population, which implies as many as 3,000 vaccine breakthrough deaths nationally, almost all since May 1st. But as he points out, they don't have to lie. So why do they? If 5% or 10% or even 15% of American COVID deaths are currently occurring in fully vaccinated people, that's impressive protection, considering that more than half the adults have been vaccinated, more than 80% of the elderly who are the most vulnerable. Why can't you just say that? Why do you have to lie? If you're lying, there's got to be a reason.
Because they want to scare people.
Yeah, but why?
Because they want to get them and they want to scare them into compliancy so that they get the vaccine. But besides that, Fauci's going to know
why he's lying. Why? That's not getting to it. Why? If why can't you make a statement like Berenson made and provide the data that Berenson got from the CDC and just be straightforward about it and be room temperature about it rather than the, to be generous, hyperbolizing the data, the implications, the dynamics at play? There's got to be a point. You can't on the one hand say this is the leading expert in the Western world and on the other hand say he doesn't understand this. So if he understands it, if he knows what he's talking about, then why is he misrepresenting his own agency's data? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. And now for probably something along the lines of what Alex and Barron's is talking about from the smarmy Tom in Deer Park. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Good morning. Yes, if you don't like masks as I don't, and if you hate and abhor lockdowns as I do, I would think everybody would go out and get their vaccination unless they're unable to. But knowing the, the anti-vax movement jumped from the yoga teachers with their candles to the MAGA right, knowing that, I was at the county fair where nobody would get the vaccine. And they had a big bowl of buttons that said, I got the vaccine. So as a public service, I will donate that bowl of buttons. And then people that don't want to get vaccine but want to actually get the economy back going can use that as their proof of vaccination. And we can maybe get this thing over with. So I will drop them off at the station as public service.
Yawn. Philip in Blue Island.
I don't know who the they is. It could be, I don't know, some rich bunch of rich people. But the fact that the
they?
Flu vaccine did,
wait.
That's what I just said. I don't know who they is. It could be.
What are you talking
can't
about?
Can't think of the guy. That's what I'm trying to. Let me make my point.
All right.
The fact that the flu vaccine didn't work. Like they wanted everybody to get the flu vaccine. They're pushing it. So that didn't work. That didn't scare people enough to go get the flu vaccine. So now they have to change the narrative and make it a more serious pandemic. And still, people are not dumb enough to just run and let somebody. And again, these patents for these vaccines were made in 2019, even before the pandemic. So there are so many missing points, but a lot of people are becoming aware, especially of the patents of these vaccines for Merck and Pfizer and all these other drug makers, that they had patents already in place before the pandemic. I mean, I don't know what sense that makes, because it really doesn't make sense.
So you're skeptical, and you don't appreciate, as what I'm hearing from you is correct, you don't appreciate the misrepresentation.
I I agree with you 1,000% for the first time in history.
All right.
But you yourself should be able to say, do not take this vaccine, because you're a very smart guy. Why? And the press is being used, CNN, all of them, Fox, everybody's. I mean, because there's this report that they said if you use the press and soon the people that are wanting to make money, because people are making billions off of this, will soon come. And so that's why CNN, that's why Fox News is coming around. That's why all these other news. Go ahead.
And Philip, just for my our friend there, Tom in Deer Park, remind us again, are you a MAGA-wearing Trump supporter? Exactly. Thanks for the call, Phil. Appreciate it, Philip from Blue Island. Appreciate that. Yeah. Interesting. The caricature by Never Trumpers like Tom from Deer Park, who don't want to have the discussion on the data and the merits like the case Alex Berenson laid out on this just particular matter, some examples, hard examples. Don't want to have that discussion because it's just easier to wave off somebody as anti-vax, which I'm not. It's easier to wave off somebody as some, you know, mindless knuckle-dragging MAGA supporter, which is the only kind of MAGA supporters they think exist. But they're the intelligentsia. They're the responsible people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Glenn in the South Suburbs. Glenn, South Suburbs? No. Somebody on the South Side.
Jimmy?
Yes.
Jim on the South Side?
Jim on the South Side.
Hey, Jim.
Okay. Here's your – hi, guys. Good interviews, by the way. Anyways, you guys do great interviews with these people.
Thank you.
Here's the answer to the question, Dan. Why don't these guys ask the questions that you guys are asking? It's a coalition. The federal elected officials, they're looking for communism. They're paid by the CCP. Unions want to stay at home and want to work. And I'm in a union. I work for the city, although I'm in emergency services, so we do work. Oligarchs, all the people that are up at the top making the money, they're making money anyways, so they don't want to, you know, they want to keep people down. It's a coalition. That's why they don't ask these questions, because the media is complicit with all of it, too.
Thanks for the call, Jim.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House floor for 30-plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay, no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when. You're moving out.
I said, Dan and Amy, that song means it's time for our weekly confab with Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints. WirePoints.org, all things Illinois policy and somewhat politically related. And, of course, Lala has been mentioned as they're making preparations to, have the city destroyed over the next 4 days.
Yeah, 100,000 people a day. And remember Dr. Emily Landon, paging Dr. Landon from University of Chicago? She says this is more than you think. Pay attention.
Remember how much people are motivated by money.
Oh.
It's really all about money. People, in many cases, will throw you, your health, your family's health, your grandmother's health under the bus in order to make a few more dollars.
Wait a second. You're saying that a triple threat and the city administration is placing money over lives?
No, really?
No.
Now they are?
If I thought for a moment that shutting down Lala would prevent further spread in the way that we're seeing it, then I wouldn't hesitate to do that.
That's the wrong conversation about Lollapalooza, as far as I'm concerned. Talking to friends and encouraging some friends to not let their kids go to Lollapalooza, it has nothing to do with COVID. It has everything to do with a city that's been turned over to violent criminals.
Oh, yeah. What are the chances that there's going to be a mass shooting at Lollapalooza?
Well,
or on the outskirts of it, and then create a stampede.
the point is, yeah, all you have to do is have one hood rat, one knucklehead, you know, flash a gun or start a fight or do something, and yeah, the whole place can go up. I think it's way too dicey a time because you have the city center that has been turned over to street criminals the same way that the West and South sides have been for generations.
Yeah, the loop is now the South side.
I can't imagine, like, I mean, I understand, you know, some kids are 18, 19 years old. They're in college or whatever. They're back for the summer. They're going to go to this concert. But I can't imagine parents that are excited about their kids going to this concert.
My kids have gone in the past, and they are absolutely not going this year. That's why we're leaving town. I knew when Lollapalooza was. I'm like, oh, that's the week we're going to go visit colleges.
Yeah, and I have a – that's good.
Because that's a good way to get them out.
That's a good idea.
And then I don't look like the bad guy.
I have friends, like, trying to bribe their kids not to go.
Really?
And I totally – I'm total agreement. It is nothing to do with COVID. Everything to do with violence and a city that has suspended the rule of law. For more on all of this, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Ted Dabrowski. Ted, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Lollapalooza, I know Emily Landon, a little bit off the reservation there. She may draw some rhetorical fire from Triple Threat, suggesting that money is being placed over the salvation of Chicago residents as it pertains to COVID.
Well, yeah, Lightfoot might find a problem with that because she might say, no, it's not money, it's power. But I guess, you know, power and money are inextricably linked, so I guess it's the same thing.
Are your kids of a Lollapalooza age? I don't know what the cutoff is, but.
Well, you know, so I've got, you know, 25, 20, 23, 21. So they're done with that for now. So I'm lucky with that. They're out, and I've got a younger one. So I'm fortunate not to think about that. But believe me, before COVID, before all this crime happened, I was always cautious about that because, you know, it's a big party place in the middle of town, and you got to be careful.
Well, now Mayor Lightfoot said yesterday, because everyone's, you know, this reinstating mask mandates, she said we have to have 200 cases a day consecutively, and then she'll put mask mandates back in place. But if you look at the numbers...
Consecutively for how many days?
That she didn't say. She just said, and of course I wasn't there to ask, well, how many days? Just consecutively. So it's right. Okay. That's what she said. But if you look at... This was always about hospitalizations. Now it's about cases. It doesn't make sense. Hospitalizations and deaths are down 75% from what they were last summer. We've made great progress, and I don't know why people don't focus on that instead of just scaring Chicagoans.
Yeah, we're back to cases, right? And forget what's happening in the rest of the part. But and there's no doubt that cases are up, or at least they're certainly reportedly up, and we've seen that across different states and stuff. But, yeah, you've got to look at hospitalizations. You've got to look at deaths. And, so far what we're seeing is that the hospitalizations are staying very, very controlled. I think a lot of the cases aren't as bad. You got younger people who've been infected, so it's not as dangerous. So I think we've got to get past this period where they can scare people. And as long as these deaths stay down, you know, they always lag the cases, but as long as they stay down, I think we should be pretty comfortable where we are. Look, we've got, you know, over almost 92% of all people over 65 years of old having at least one vaccine. And 74% of people over 18 with one vaccine. So the numbers are awesome in that sense that we're getting past the point where we can get to that herd immunity. So I think we don't have to last that much longer as long as these variants don't turn crazy on us.
Mm-hmm. There's enough federal funding money to have lotteries for vaccinations and so on and so forth. But we've got a $4 billion deficit in Illinois' unemployment trust fund. We got the state with unemployment north of 7%, and not every state is situated like that with a deficit and a significant deficit, multi-billion-dollar deficit in its unemployment trust fund. Why is Illinois in that position with all the largesse we got from the feds?
Yeah, you know, this is one of those where Pritzker and others celebrated a little too heavy with their budget and upgrades. Ignoring the fact that there's this, it's a $5 billion hole compared to what we started with. What this means is that if we don't replenish this unemployment insurance fund, then companies are going to have to raise taxes effectively to get that money and fill the coffers again. And what's fascinating about all this is that, you know, we've reported this on this call, the amount of dollars that the state has gotten overall, public, private, individuals, not-for-profits, et cetera, is about $160 billion. So, they could have used and can use and should use that federal largesse to fill those coffers again instead of making, in the end, you know, companies and people pay up again.
You know what we could use? We could use a Chicago casino. Gambling, drugs, prostitution, those are always the go-tos in a mob economy like Illinois. But Wall Street Journal piece the other day, Chicago casino Chicago leaders are looking for a company to operate, but operators are concerned about how costly it would be to try to operate a casino in the city of Chicago. So, boy, I tell you, when casino operators are saying, you know, a casino in Chicago is a bad bet, that really says something about the regulatory and economic environment in the city if casinos want to take a pass on Chicago.
Well, I mean, I think that's just typical of Chicago wanting its cut, right? A bigger cut than maybe other cities might do, and that's par for the course in Chicago. But, you know, it also it tells a different story, too, because, you know, you've got, of course, you got the drug revenue, you know, marijuana revenue coming in. We're moving more and more away from, let's call it, the core, you know, diversified economy of industry and services, and we're trying to add casinos to fund pensions. We're trying to add, you know, drug income to fund pensions, which is interesting also because yesterday it looks like we're reaching an agreement with the police union in Chicago to sign a new contract that will cost hundreds of millions as well. So more money is needed.
And with respect to pensions, and you know, since that FOP mayor deal is pending, the police pension fund pre-COVID was the least well-funded outside of the General Assembly's own pension fund in the state. It was like the low 20s
in that's right
percentage. I mean, so that was tracking to be insolvent in the next, say, 24 months, meaning unable to pay out current beneficiaries. Is that still the track?
Well, you know, it is. It's, like you said, about 22% funded or even less. And maybe it has, you know, 4 years' worth of money kind of thing. It all depends on what money's shoved into the plan. But what's interesting about this new contract, and, you know, the average pension right now is about $80,000 for a current retiree, one who retires right now. It's about $80,000. The salaries are really high. So, you know, this new contract that gives 20% raises over 8 years is going to put a lot more pressure on that pension fund. And, you know, Chicago's got funny money right now, so maybe some of that can be used to fund some of pensions, but there's not enough funny money to go around right now. So I think this FOP contract might be great for police and trying to keep some of the public safety, but it's creating a bigger hole.
Well, and just
they finally get that raise.
Well, and yeah, okay, but just so we understand the numbers we're talking about, I mean, put this in real terms for your average, you know, private sector workaday schmo like me. So $80,000 a year guaranteed because it's defined benefit plan. Net present value, you retire at 55, let's say. That's what, $2.5 million guaranteed pension?
Oh, no. It'll be closer to 3.5 to 4.
3.5, okay.
3.5, yeah. Yeah, so it's good money, right? I mean, I'd say. You know, and it depends because some of the COLAs are different in Chicago versus the state, but it's good money. And right now, just for a data point, $92,000 is the average salary in FOP. And again, you know, I think we got to protect our. You know, we've talked about this a lot. We've got to make sure that we protect our blue. We just have to make sure that the math works so that their pensions can eventually
right.
be paid. And they can, and not, you know, if we're not careful, we're going to have to fire lots of policemen because there's not enough money in the pension fund.
Well, this is not about, like, who deserves what. This is about, you know, what you're conferring versus what you're financing. This is exactly what you said. It's a math problem. It always has been. And everybody gets all hysterical because you're disrespecting this person or this group of employees if you don't write them a blank check. Nobody gets a blank check in this world. So now that we've established that, or nobody should, people apparently do in the public sector unions in this state, but now that we've established that fact, now let's talk about what we can afford and what you're willing to pay as a society in order to finance the obligations you're incurring. That's the actual conversation, but everybody gets so hysterical because they take it as a personal slight that you're suggesting that, you know, you get a guaranteed $3.5 million pension and somebody in the private sector earning a commensurate amount of money would have to save, would have to contribute, slash save and thus contribute, gosh, what, about 8 to 10 times what public sector workers have to contribute for that guaranteed level of benefit?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, the average Chicagoan is trying to help pay for these pensions, and the average Chicagoan doesn't make anywhere near that, right? And they certainly don't have, a couple million or a million and a half saved up when they retire. So this is a big burden on the people who live here in Chicago. And you've got to make the math work, and you're seeing this across not just in Chicago, but you're seeing, like, Springfield Fire, active police and fire in order to fund pensioners. You've seen East St. Louis, places like East St. Louis and Harvey, for sure, they're having to fire active workers to pay for pensions. So, you know, these cities are being forced to choose between public safety pensioners or public safety active workers, and it's an ugly choice, right?
Mm-hmm. All right, Ted, so I lost $100 to Dan Proft because I thought Governor Pritzker was not going to run.
I predicted you would lose.
Yeah, he wanted some of that action. And also send the $100 you owe Ted Dabrowski to interview.
Exactly.
Okay, so now Mayor Lightfoot, she's doing the same song and dance routine.
My reelection is not a priority for me at this point. It will become something that we talk about as a family later on, but that's not now.
And she told the New York Times reporter that, it's not a gimme that she's going to run for reelection.
Oh,
what are,
gosh.
Do you think that, what? Do you think she could actually win if she ran again for office, Ted?
Well, I think those are two different questions, right? One, whether she'll run again, and no doubt we're back to the same thing, like Pritzker, gosh, you know, geez, should I run again? You know, that kind of thing. Please tell me I should. She's looking for that kind of thing. But I think she definitely will, and I think it's pretty interesting, right? She doesn't have to worry about a teacher's contract anymore because she pushed that over. If I remember right, she pushed that over her next election mm-hmm. period. She just got the police contract, or she will get the police contract done. She's passed, let's hope, she's passed the worst of COVID. And so, you know, I think now if she gets it right, she gets to push her equity agenda and all that stuff without the problems of the past. So I think we shouldn't be fooled. You know, she wants to do more of what she's doing, and she's going to have all the power if she can keep the position. But I do think she's vulnerable. I think when you add up crime, COVID, schools, equity, it's all over the place.
And her personality. I mean, that's the real killer for her. She's just such a disagreeable person as opposed to that Stay Puft Marshmallow Man who's the governor. He's, you know, sort of like a jovial, dopey fat guy. He's sort of, you know, non-threatening. She's sort of threatening because she's just so antagonistic and disagreeable and, frankly, just distasteful. I think that has a lot to do with it, but that's sort of a political discussion, not a policy one. Ted Dabrowski, president at WirePoints, wirepoints.org, all things Illinois policy related. Ted, thanks as always.
All right, you guys have a great day.
Thanks. And we do have some breaking news. A member of Tony Preckwinkle's security detail was robbed last night while on duty. They were down the block from her house, and he was patrolling the area. No shots were fired, but he was roughed up.
Same assailant who robbed Barbara Boxer?
It could be.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Fake Christianity is America's new religion. Fake Christianity. To be more precise, moralistic, therapeutic deism, which is my version of that is sentimental barbarism, which I have mentioned often. Moralistic, therapeutic deism. We're here to be good people, to try to do good. Everything's supposed to be geared to making me feel good about myself, make me happy. God created the world, but he doesn't have any direct involvement with it. There's a distant God who just wants everybody to be nice to each other and get along and find their happiness, which is why you live your truth. You become a Christian like President Obama was a Christian. What is sin? Sin is something that goes against my values. Remember that famous statement?
That's right.
I am the repository of truth, so anything I do that goes against my stated values, that's what sin is. There's no absolute truth that exists outside of me, and there's no responsibilities, and there should be no suffering or consequences. It's fun. Sentimental barbarism. feels good. I mean, it's you know, a half a step from nihilism, as far as I'm concerned. And it takes us as individuals and as a country to some pretty dark places in terms of the sort of barbarism we're willing to tolerate. We see it with respect to the violence on the streets of Chicago, for example. We also see it geopolitically with respect to the sort of persecution of people that we're willing to turn a blind eye towards in exchange for economic benefit. Think about, for example, the NBA's posture towards communist China against the backdrop of Uyghur concentration camps and the persecution of Christians and the imprisonment of freedom fighters like Jimmy Lai, who we've talked about in this show, whose newspaper Apple Daily just got shut down. A sort of in the founding father tradition of our country, somebody who amassed a fortune, Jimmy Lai, to become a freedom fighter and put it all on the line in furtherance of people's liberty against a repressive regime. And what do we say about it? Not a ton. Not a ton. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by our friend, Reverend Robert Sirico. He is the president and co-founder of the Acton Institute. One of my, again, I always mention this, Acton Institute, connecting good intentions to sound economics, one of the great taglines of think tanks in America. Father Sirico, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So what about this? And this is from some survey. Everett Piper, former president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, wrote about this survey. This immoralistic therapeutic deism, this fake Christianity, as he terms it, that is now the country's religion and the implications.
Well, you know, as you were discussing that, I was remembering a quote from H. Richard Niebuhr, who was no arch conservative, but he made a remark about liberal theology, and this is like in the 1940s. He said, a God without wrath, this describes their doctrine, a God without wrath brought men without sin into a kingdom without judgment through the ministrations of a Christ without a cross. They've just drained the whole thing of its essential meaning and substituted sociology or therapy or any kind of other abstract notion for the cross of Christ.
The reason I selected China as sort of a manifestation of where this belief system can lead you, what it can lead you to tolerate, I selected China because I know this is something that you have been particularly focused on, the freedom of Hong Kongers and the end to the persecution of Christians and Muslims alike.
Yeah, I like that term Hong Konger, by the way. I hope you use it a lot. I hope other people will use it a lot because it makes the distinction between what's going on the mainland and the freedom that the people of Hong Kong, anybody who's ever been to Hong Kong, it's like New York's Chinatown writ large. But now it is becoming a Stalinist camp. People are afraid to give interviews. They're afraid to speak their mind. They can't protest. And this, what was supposed to be one country, two systems, is now becoming just one totalitarian system. And I don't think that this may be the thing that trips the lever. It may rekindle the spirit of Tiananmen Square, where there were demonstrations all over China for freedom. And it links to other things, too, because it's not just China. Because this isn't a Chinese disease. This is a totalitarian disease. This links to Cuba. This links to Venezuela and North Korea. And if we can inspire an international movement of people who say, look, we're human beings. We have the right to our lives, our property, our associations. This can be a great thing for the world. Could you imagine a free China with all of these entrepreneurial people working with an enormous amount of intelligence and resources at their disposal to create a free world, a prosperous world? It would be wonderful.
Well, do you think as a way to, give or not pay back for China is to pull out of the Beijing 2022 Olympics?
I think there are a whole bunch of prudential decisions that can be made. I'm not a policy wonk, but I think we need to send constant messages to China that this is not tolerable. But what we need to do, I mean, I think the pulling out of the Olympics might be one thing, or these restrictions on specific areas of trade might be another thing. But what we need is a vast momentum, both outside of China, but also in mainland China, that points to how unjust and how intolerable this kind of a system is. This is what happened, remember, not so long ago. I mean, some of us still remember the fall of the Berlin Wall. This is what needs to happen in Asia.
But that, I mean, it's difficult to see how that happens from the outside, but certainly outside actors can help to focus people's attention to perhaps facilitate inside revolutionaries in the direction of freedom, of course. But, you know, it requires sort of a moral framework from which one operates. Yeah. It requires a willingness to make statements of conscience. And I just don't know that you're going to get many statements of conscience from the political elites or the C-suites in this country.
In this country, yeah. I mean, we have our own set of very, very serious problems along the same lines. But let's remember, we don't initially need a great plethora of moral statements, especially from elites. We only need moral statements from courageous people, a Solzhenitsyn, a Mandela, a Jimmy Lai. The potency of their witness, because what is it? They're tapping a knowledge that every single human being has in their heart, that they possess an inherent dignity and a right to their own freedom. They're made in the image and likeness of God, and we may express it in different traditional languages, but that's the reality, and that's what needs to be pointed to. We just need to not let the witness of a Jimmy Lai go forgotten.
Well, you know, so how do you aid and abet those who are willing to provide that kind of courage, that kind of witness, as you say? I mean, because Tank Man, everybody remembers Tank Man in Tiananmen Square, even though we don't know who he was, which is sort of part of the power of it. But then how do you aid and abet that? So Tank Man provided that example in Tiananmen Square, and yet in 2021, here we are with respect to a communist China that's even more repressive than it was 40 years ago.
Solzhenitsyn didn't just write Cancer Ward or the Gulag Archipelago, and the next day Berlin Wall fell. There's going to be a great cost. This is why it's so heroic. There's a great cost being paid by a man right now in a Chinese Hong Kong prison who could have left Hong Kong at any time and lived in any number of his homes worldwide. Remember, this is a billionaire. Mm-hmm. This is a man who came to Shanghai penniless and over the course of a career built an empire of both clothing, textiles, and media, and chose to stay in this place to testify to freedom. I think what we need to do is amplify the story, and you're doing that right now in this interview, in this conversation. And everyone in their own respective field of influence, whether they're preachers in their homilies or teachers in their classes or just around the coffee cooler to tell the story. This is the way we build this awareness. And at some point, there's a tipping point where a new Tiananmen Square takes place.
You have the Acton Institute, which you're the president of, co-founder of, also has schools, speaking of that. And so this is part of the education, I'm sure. I wonder how you react to fight that's going on across the nation over critical race theory as part of the curriculum. And I think about this in a biblical context, too. Just reading a manuscript of a new book from a friend of mine who's a DePaul philosophy professor. And on the and it's entitled What White Americans Owe Black Americans. And the scripture passage on the first page is from Ezekiel 18:20. The son shall not suffer for the iniquity of the father, nor the father suffer for the iniquity of the son. His point being the to sort of lead into a conversation on reparations and the sins of the past being sort of worked out in the present. And your reaction to that against the backdrop of the fight over K through 12 curriculum?
Well, let me say that critical race theory, in many ways, very much like Black Lives Matter, have tapped into a truth. You know, G.K. Chesterton said that heresy is truth gone mad. You know, it's a feature of the truth, like the deity of Jesus Christ or the humanity of Christ. And you just say, well, he is only man, he's not God. This the heresy is truth gone mad. And the truth that these movements, the racial movements, have tapped into is the great injustice at the founding of the United States, that people could own slaves, that they were defended. And this is a great debate at the founding. You know, it wasn't just like, let's go along with this. So I think we have to begin with that. We have to acknowledge that. We have to, in effect, take this out of the hand of Marxists. And we need to be the proponents. It was the Republican Party who fought against slavery. It wasn't the progressives. They were the real racists in their day. So I think that's the first step, that we need to make very clear that we're opposed to this collectivist mentality that judges people simply by their collective race. And then we need to say, now, there is reparation owed to people, but it is not a kind of collective thing where it's a step, in effect, towards socialism. This is not the solution to the ills of the past. So I don't want to say that there's nothing that white Americans owe blacks. We certainly owe them the respect and the dignity and need to fight the tendencies, the cultural tendencies that have grown up in 300 years in this country, and own the issue ourselves. And that, I think, will dilute and displace this kind of Marxist-inspired racial hatred that's being projected into our schools.
He is Father Robert Sirico, president and co-founder of the Acton Institute, also the author of a number of books, including Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy. Father Sirico, thanks for joining us, as always. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and that recall election in California to recall gruesome Gavin Newsom is just about 6 weeks away. And one of the candidates, and not without incident, to replace him is, of course, our friend in sound, our colleague, the sage of South Central. He is Larry Elder, host of the Larry Elder Show and AM 560 The Answer, weekdays 7 to 9 p.m. He's also the executive producer of the film Uncle Tom, An Oral History of the American Black Conservative, which is really good.
Yeah, I watched it with the whole family.
Yeah, and it's still on the streaming services, so pick it up. He's also a nominee, as we've mentioned a couple times over the last couple of days, for the Radio Hall of Fame, and to vote Larry Elder into the Radio Hall of Fame, which is something you should do. Go to radiovote.com. And he's got this other undertaking. He's a candidate for governor of California. Larry, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan and Amy, thank you so much for having me. At the risk of sounding immodest, may I also add one little thing to my resume?
Please.
I also have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, corner of Hollywood and Vine. I'm not kidding you. They only have about maybe 10, 15 radio people in their entire history, and I was very flattered to be honored about six years ago. So now you can stand on the corner of Hollywood and Vine and watch people say in 27 different languages, who the blank is Larry Elder?
Congratulations. That's better than being homecoming queen.
Is that cornered?
I'm not sure about that. Whether you're male or female. Oh, he went there.
Well, I mean, either way these days. So that is cordoned off by velvet ropes as a 24/7 security guard, I presume. That's a Hollywood star.
Well, you know that they did that to, I think it was Donald Trump's star. Someone you know, plowed into
defaced it.
So far, I just see gum and some spit, but it's still there.
All right. Well, put a little video camera there in case Gavin Newsom and some of his goons come to deface it. So, I've heard you talk about the decision to make this run in the recall against Gavin Newsom, and
right.
and our colleague Dennis Prager encouraged you to do it, and you were initially reluctant, but you got over that. So what's the state of the campaign? What's your attitude coming into this very short campaign to be governor of California?
Well, it's a two-step deal. It's a very short ballot. And the first question is, do you want Gavin Newsom recalled? Unless 50% plus one voter says yes, the next question really is sort of irrelevant, and that is, who do you want to replace him? So enough voters have to vote to replace Gavin Newsom, and then whoever gets the greatest number of votes to replace him becomes the next governor. So you could conceivably win with maybe 20, 25%, even less plurality of the vote. And the reason for the recall is because of the way Gavin Newsom has arrogantly handled this coronavirus pandemic. And then you add to that the rising crime, the rising homelessness, and the ridiculous cost of living. That's why 2.2 million Californians, including maybe 25-30% of independents and Democrats who just 2 years earlier voted for this man, voted to have signed the petition to have this recall election, which takes place on September the 14th.
I mean, it is so dangerous in California. Your former Senator Barbara Boxer got assaulted and robbed at a park in Oakland.
Yeah, and her cell phone was taken. And the outgoing governor, Jerry Brown, a Democrat, even criticized the excessive spending of this particular governor, Gavin Newsom. What he's been doing basically is paying off people. He's giving another year for rent-free, of course, the $300 that you get for not working. And my friends who are running restaurants and small businesses tell me they cannot get employees to work because it's cheaper to stay home and sit around. We also have a huge crime problem because voters passed something called Proposition 40. Foolishly, the intent was good because a lot of people who are shoplifting are doing so to support their drug habit, and the idea is they'd be better off in rehab than going to jail. But the county sheriff recently told me that they've taken away the stick. If you're on the street and you're stealing in order to support your drug habit, what's your incentive to get rehab if you don't have the threat of going to jail? So that's been removed. It's now a misdemeanor. You can steal up to $950, not just every day, but at any given store, as long as you don't get caught. And if you get caught, you get a ticket. You don't go to jail. So it's ridiculous. And then, of course, we have this assault on the police, not just nationally, but statewide, the accusation that the police are engaging in systemic racism when study after study after study shows if any thing, the police are more hesitant, more reluctant to pull the trigger on a black suspect than a white suspect. And as a result, cops are human beings, and they are simply not engaging in what we call proactive policing. Much of policing, of course, is discretionary. So instead of getting out when you see bad guys arguably doing something, you just respond to radio calls. Bad guys know what crime goes up, and the people that are most likely affected by it are black and brown people, the very people that the left claims they care about. And then you have this ridiculous cost of living. My dad came to California in 1945. He worked two jobs as a janitor cleaning toilets, but he was able to have a stay-at-home wife, my mother, and she stayed at home until the youngest of us was in middle school, and he managed to save his nickels and dimes and buy a house which is now worth $600,000. It's still in the family in South Central. No one could duplicate my father's path as an eighth-grade dropout if he or she worked three jobs. The average price of a home in California is 150% more than the average price of home in America, and because of the rules and regulations that have been jammed down the throats of the Californians by these environmental extremists that don't want building whatsoever, the average home in California literally costs 50% more than it would be but for the rules and regulations all foisted by these environmentalists. So for the first time in our state's history, the first time, there's been a net migration out of California. And it's not millionaires and billionaires, to quote Bernie Sanders. They don't mind paying 13.3% top marginal tax rate, the highest in the country. It's middle-class people, people making between $50,000 and $75,000 who can't get that first home. And finally, there's a magazine called CEO Magazine. It's been around 17 years. And CEOs are asked which of the 50 states is the best, which of the 50 states is the worst in which to do business, based upon taxes, based upon spending, based upon unfunded pension liabilities, the strength of the public sector unions, which is enormous here in California, and whether or not there's a business-friendly attitude. And for the 17 years of this magazine's existence, California has been rated the worst state in which to do business of all 50.
Yeah, Illinois is close, though. Yeah, we're trying to catch you. Here's the thing.
It's a pretty low bar.
Yeah.
So you know, it's interesting how that, you know, for people who have been through recall and or don't follow closely, how the two-question process on the ballot. So first you need the majority to say Newsom is gone, and then you pick who you want to replace him, and it's just
correct.
A plurality vote. And so right now I think you're leading the field or right there. So if you get the first question right, then Larry Elder is poised to be the answer to the second question. And so getting people over that threshold, you know, there's a range of issues. You just went through a bunch of them. Is it a referendum on the French Laundry and his handling of COVID, his imperiousness? Is it a referendum on crime? I mean, we see the numbers in terms of people who want more cops on the streets coming out of inner cities like Detroit at 8 and 9 to 1. It's same right. thing in Chicago, same thing in New York. So what is the referendum question you're trying to push to say, hey, Californians, when you think about whether or not to replace Gavin Newsom, answer this question. More cops, less cops, more freedom, less freedom with respect to COVID. What's the question?
Well, Dan, I think it's all of the above, and that's why I'm asking people to go to electelder.com and throw a little something in the tip jar. But you're absolutely right. The French Laundry was the microcosm. It showed you the arrogance of this man. He was sitting with the very medical experts that drafted the mandates that they were sitting there violating. They weren't wearing masks. They weren't engaging in social distancing. And this man has had his own children enjoying in-school private education as he abided by the teachers' union, his largest funder, and they shut down education for an entire year. Already kids are backward here in California. 80% of the kids educated in public schools in California are black and brown. 75% of black boys cannot read at state levels of proficiency, and that was before they were locked out of school for a whole year. 50% of third graders in the state of California cannot read at state levels of proficiency. I went to an urban high school called Crenshaw High School. If you saw the movie
sure.
Boys in the Hood,
yeah.
that was my high school. 2% can do math, 2% are math proficient. Now, there are 300,000 public school teachers in California. It is estimated that 5% of them are incompetent, you know, just miseducating kids, not educating kids. That's 15,000 teachers. In any given year, the average year, 2.2 teachers are fired. Now, we wouldn't tolerate that with cops. I'm in Los Angeles. The LAPD is roughly 10,000 officers. Imagine 5% of officers bad cops, planting evidence, engaging in racial profiling, using excessive force. We wouldn't put up with 500 bad cops roaming the streets, but we're putting up with 15,000 bad teachers roaming the halls of our schools. It's outrageous. Outrageous. And again, this man has his own kids enjoying in-person, mm-hmm. in-school, private education.
Yeah, we had the same thing here. Pritzker got his family out 2 days before he shut down Illinois and then shut down our sports, shut down travel sports while his daughter was still able to do her equestrian jumping. Yesterday, Governor Newsom is requiring state employees and healthcare workers to get vaccinated, vaccine mandate. How do you feel about that?
Well, he didn't require them to get vaccinated. He required those who did not get vaccinated to be tested, I think, once a week,
yeah.
and also to wear a mask while at work. Now, think about that. The whole point of getting vaccinated is you're allegedly protected against the coronavirus. Now, if people don't want to get vaccinated, you're requiring them to wear masks, to wear face masks, to protect the other people who don't want to get vaccinated, both of whom have assumed the risk. I mean, it's ridiculous. It has nothing to do with science. And once again, this guy has ignored science put all these mandates, and just, we're just a step away, Amy, from him now mandating it for private business as he did during the coronavirus mandate. It's ridiculous. Everybody in the state of California who wants to get vaccinated can get vaccinated, and poor people can get vaccinated for free. So clearly people are making the decision not to do it. They're assuming the risk, and other people who have not been vaccinated have to assume the risk that there are going to be other people around them not vaccinated. Isn't that what freedom is all about? Thomas Jefferson warned us about trading freedom for public safety. And that's what they've done here.
Well, I mean, how much fun would it be to have a Governor Larry Elder?
Oh
my
God! So happy. Are you?
California will be in that. You think Texas Dems fled to D.C.? I mean, there is going to be that would be so much fun.
Oh,
that you against the public sector unions and the teachers union in particular, and these issues. Oh my goodness, California would be in the headlines every single day. What fun would that would be? And it's just a massive undertaking because it's a state of 40 million people. And, you know, why don't you just want to, you know, make movies and play golf and just chill out?
Well, I'm born here. I'm from here. I have been talking about these issues now for 27 years. I am better known than any of the other Republican candidates other than Caitlyn Jenner. I'm on in every major market in California from Sacramento down to San Diego. And I've been writing about these things for years. And I have some commonsensical ideas. People say, well, Larry, you don't have any experience. Well, Gavin Newsom has a boatload of experience. He was the mayor of San Francisco. He was 8 years lieutenant governor, 2 years right now. Look what we got. And there was a fellow some years ago who came out of Hollywood, and he ended up being a two-term California governor and a two-term president. not too shabby. I'm not comparing myself
to
the great Ronald Reagan, but in terms of experience, so there you go.
Elect elder.com.
Elect elder.com because Gavin Newsom, by the way, has no spending limitations. I do. I can only spend about $9 million. It is estimated that he's going to throw about $50 million against me. So without people in both in California and outside California helping me, and those who are millionaires and billionaires, they can contribute money to political action committees that support choice in school, that support the repeal of that Proposition 47 that I mentioned that allows people to steal up to $950 a day and just commit a misdemeanor. And if you can do that, we maybe be able to rival his guy's war chest and get him out of here. And when I become governor, I have a lot of power, even though I'll be dealing with a hostile legislature that's two-thirds Democrat. I have the ability to veto. I have a line item veto. There hasn't been a bill vetoed that's been overridden since the 70s for whatever reason. When they pass something stupid, and Arnold Schwarzenegger vetoed hundreds of bills, you go public and talk about how stupid the bill was, and all of a sudden people pick up the phone and call their state senator and state assembly person and say, what the hell were you thinking? And it doesn't get overridden. And finally, I can declare a public emergency. I can declare a public emergency on housing because of the shortage. I can declare a public emergency because of homelessness and because of the incompetent teachers. There's a lot of stuff I can do. I'll see them in court, of course. They'll sue me no matter what I do, but Dan and Amy, hold my beer.
Okay. All right. I'm going to electelder.com to make a donation. Make sure Prager writes a big check. He got you into this. So let him off the hook. Larry Elder, host of The Larry Elder Show on AM 560, weekdays 7 to 9 p.m.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.